Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Willis?
Well, we got a sponsor this hour. It's Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They are everything John Deere. Go up there and see me if you're looking for a new tractor, mower. They have all the new electric mowers and handheld equipment in stock. And if you need parts service, they do it all up there. If you're looking to get your machine worked on, tuned up, or repairs made, now's the time to get in there and get it done. Fall is right around the corner, and they will get busy. So get ahead of the rush and get in there and get your stuff all tuned up and ready to go for fall. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call, 530-226-9226, or catch him on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Okay. So,
here we go.
I was trying to mind meld with the engineer in a different room through two panes of glass.
I thought you were giving me the thumbs up because it really was a great job.
Oh, wait. Hold on.
Oh, there we go.
Thumbs up for Bill.
Yeah. So,
oh boy.
So, what do we have going on this morning?
Is it going to be that kind of day?
Yeah.
It is, okay.
Yeah, all right.
So, let's see. Today is September 22nd, 2024, when we're airing this the first time, because we'll probably do it again because you're going to like both these segments. We have two different guests today. First hour, we are talking about Operation Grim Beeper. Grim Beeper with our guest, Claire Lopez. I heard that last night on something when I was driving. I drove 8 hours yesterday. I had plenty of time to listen to stuff, and somebody called it Operation Grim Beeper, and I was like, okay, that's really funny. I'm going to use that. And the second hour is What's in Your Pot? Lots of reports coming out about all the stuff we've been telling you that actually we've been accused of being, you know, whatever, conspiracy.
Yeah, it looks like now you're really going to have to throw all your pot away.
Yeah, because it's loaded with pesticides, and I think you will be mind blown.
Leave it out for the mice and the rats and
well,
all
actually,
that,
some of the pesticides, when you smoke them, it's cyanide, so you know, you have that to look forward to. Melts your brain, and that's like the scientific thing it says. That melts your brain. So you have that to look forward to in the second hour, but the first one we get to hear about how we beat the, I'm using the term we loosely, we get to hang with our folks in the Israeli military, and Claire can give us more detail on that, but they dealt a decisive blow last week, and anyone who missed that, seriously, the memes were worth catching up on the news story. They've been fantastic. So Claire has been on before, and I have her full biography on there. But from 2013 to 2016, which I think was the fun part, I don't know if it was fun for her, but it's kind of fun for me to say, she was a member of the Citizens Commission on Benghazi. And God bless America, didn't we want more people on the Citizens Commission to Benghazi? Continues as a member of the Citizens Commission on National Security. She was formerly the VP of the Intelligence Summit. Can't have too many people on an intelligence summit these days for God's sake. She was a career operations officer with the CIA, hence the conversation about Grim Beeper with her. She's a professor at the Center for Counterintelligence and Security Studies, executive director of the Iran Policy Committee from 2005 to 2006, served as a consultant, instructor, intelligence analyst, and researcher for a variety of defense firms. I can only imagine how long that list is. And in 2011, she was named Lincoln Fellow at the Claremont Institute. And she is just an all-around good person, and she is tons of fun. We love talking with Claire. We've done bunches of shows with her. So, Claire, how great was this week for you? She's an expert on the Middle East, actually. That was your career, right? You were Middle East mostly?
No, I was not, actually.
How come you know so much about
Aaron,
it?
Aaron, and hi to Bill. Very glad to be on with you both
thank
again.
You.
Really got to update that bio for you.
Oh, darn it.
From 20...
Just got good at it.
10 till 2014, I was a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. 2014 until 2020, I was senior vice president for research and analysis there.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, until I got kicked out.
See, Claire's even more impressive than I thought. There
well,
you go.
Just updating things a little bit here. In 2016, I was actually named to Ted Cruz's National Security Advisory Team, but up until a few months when he dropped out of that presidential race. So it was only a few months there. Let's see, what else? Currently, I should say that I am independent since 2020, and I'm incorporated in the Commonwealth of Virginia under Lopez Liberty, LLC.
Nice. Okay, so I'm emailing you right now. Need a current bio. So anyone listening,
I'll send it to you.
On September 22nd, 2024, you just go to the website at wethepeopleradio.us, and you'll get the whole current scoop. Because it's really long, so I thought, hey, I'm going to start in the middle this time, because, you know, sometimes I don't get to the middle. So I thought I'd start there, and psh, dang, if it wasn't old news. Well, so what isn't old news is the... You lay it out however you'd like, because I just think it's so much fun. I've got to post some memes while we're at it, because they were priceless.
Yeah, so this past week probably was not so much fun for the Hezbollah operatives who got taken out in an operation that targeted their pagers. Those little kind of old-fashioned communications devices that aren't used that much anymore. But in the earlier part of this year, 2024, I guess it was, Hezbollah leadership, Secretary General Hassan Nasrallah and so forth, decided that cell phones were not secure in terms of communications because the Israelis could hack into them much too easily. So at that point, early, I think maybe February of this year, 2024, Hezbollah put out an order for like about 5,000 of these pager devices, which are still manufactured, and they placed the order with a Taiwan company called Gold Apollo. But what happened is that Gold Apollo had sublet its license to a company in Hungary, which more and more kind of looks like it might have been a Mossad front company from the get-go.
What are the odds of that?
But in any case, it was that company that actually manufactured these pagers and delivered them to Hezbollah earlier this year. But along with the, you know, the manufacturer, they added a couple of extras, a couple of ounces perhaps, of the explosive PETN, pentaerythritol tetranitrate, and some kind of a trigger device that would set it all off. And they somehow got, you know, these little bits into these rather small devices, quite small, and got them delivered to Hezbollah in Lebanon earlier this year, maybe a few months ago or so. And so what we saw this past week was really amazing. I mean, not just amazing, you know, how the supply chain was intercepted by whomever. I mean, people are, you know, kind of thinking it was the Mossad, but we'll say by whomever intercepted, you know, and then, you know, everything inserted they wanted inserted, and then the things delivered to the Hezbollah people. But so what happened on, I think it was like, what, Tuesday of this past week, whomever, but let's just speculate, let's say it was the Mossad, the Israelis began to suspect that perhaps the operation had been discovered, or at least that there were suspicions about the pagers, and that caused them, reportedly, to speed up the timetable. And so it was on this past Tuesday that they, whomever, triggered these explosions simultaneously across Lebanon and into Syria, as I understand it as well, setting off explosions in all of these pagers. Now, what they did is sent a pager message, that would be a text message, to the devices first to make sure that the Hezbollah guys, and these were all Hezbollah guys, these were not, you know, innocent children playing on a soccer field or something. These were Hezbollah guys that got these pagers. To make sure that they would pick them up from wherever they were, out of their pocket, off the table, and have them in their hands, and a second later, after they press whatever button it is to read the text message, that blew the thing up. And that ensured that the devices were not only in their hands, many of which were blown off, but close to their faces, because they were going to read the message, right? And so that led to quite a number of very serious injuries, hands, fingers, faces, eyes. In a way, a little bit of poetic justice, you might say, in that the Iranian regime, the of course, the Islamic Jihad terror sponsor of Hezbollah, during so many of the street protests, we might note that September, this month we're still in, just about a week ago, marked the two-year anniversary of the beginning of the Zan Zendegi Azadi movement, a woman life freedom movement in Iran, following on the murder, the bludgeoning to death of that young Kurdish woman, Mahsa Amini, because her hijab had slipped while she was riding inside the family car in Tehran. Yeah, but in any case, during the protests, which blew up after that, and people were outraged in Iran, as well they should be, many of the Iranian forces deliberately shot at the protesters, at their eyes, and at their private parts. And so, in a way, these pagers blowing up in the hands of these Hezbollah jihadis, holding the pagers close to their faces, kind of in a way a bit of poetic justice. Now, that was Tuesday. We can get to the rest of the week after that, if you'd like.
Yeah, well, they there were a lot of pictures online, and that was, I think, where the jokes and the memes started, was a lot of them were still in their pockets and blew up. So it was kind of like,
well, some were. I mean, people were just kind of latching on to a, you know, kind of prurient interest kind
of course,
stuff.
Of course.
The most of them,
were in their
and
hands.
Deliberately, again, were intended for when they picked them up, the pagers up with their hands.
Yeah.
That was the idea. And so you've got, was well over, I may have even forgotten the number now, but over 3,000, maybe it's over 4,000 injured. And many, many hundreds of others killed, outright killed, which not only decapitated.
Well, unlike the stuff that these guys do, it didn't take out a hospital, a school.
That was the point.
Yeah, it
so
was very, very
specifically targeted,
yep,
just to the bad guys, just to the Hezbollah jihadis,
and
nobody
the people
else
close to them.
But even physically, even not even for, it was so specific, the charge of these little pagers in their hands.
Yeah,
that it was their hands, their fingers, their faces, their eyes. But what I was going to say is that what this did is took out thousands of their very Hezbollah's very top fighters, because that's who got the pagers. Not every single rank and file member, but the top levels, they're gone. So not only are the top levels wiped out, but we'll get to the rest of the week when more targeted, very specifically targeted attacks have taken place. But that not only took out, you know, hors de combat for thousands and those killed permanently, but it also instilled, you know, a sense of just psychological dislocation, fear of touching anything technological, be it a pager, a cell phone, as well.
Yeah, if it has a button, you have to wonder, you know, I mean, you have to wonder, right?
Well, exactly.
Well, we're going to take a really quick break and then come right back with Claire
okay, one more point.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, the last thing very quickly of the three objectives here, took out the fighters, psychological discombobulation.
Sure.
Number three, their comms are gone. They use these pagers in replacement of cell phones. And so they're gone. They're out. They don't have comms anymore at that level, which they thought were safe, encrypted, and secure. And not only were they not, they don't have them anymore.
How much you want to bet if they put in an order for cell phones?
Well, from home.
Yeah. They're going to be like, all right, you guys have to go over and watch them make them.
just about.
I don't know. It's
so those three things, you know, to me, really important to.
And this
to
started. They had to
done.
Have been working on this for just
years,
such a long
literally
time.
Literally years. Yes.
God, that's...
from idea to implementation and all the rest of it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, to catch the pagers before they got here and all that. It wasn't like they went and snuck up on a few guys.
Well, again,
in their house.
If that company in Hungary, as is suspected, was a Mossad front company, then they had that production part of it covered from the get-go.
Oh, it says a lot about their ability to keep a secret, too. You work
on a project
that long and nobody says anything.
Well, there was a terrific thing circulating. It was a black and white picture of a guy in a suit, you know, carrying a gun with a silencer, all really understated, and it said Mossad, because James Bond needs a hero.
it's like, I mean, just amazing operation.
Yeah,
right?
Really. I mean, hats off. I'm sure they'll be talking about that forever. We'll be right back. Our guest is Claire Lopez, and we're chit-chatting about something that was named by somebody else called Operation Grim Beeper, which I frankly thought was funny. And you're listening to We the People. You can find this at wethepeopleradio.us. Just a suggestion for Hezbollah the musical. All these songs take on new meaning now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Officer Joe's in here with us for the next hour. He's like, I'm moving away from you now. You can't get away from the microphone. I mean, we shouldn't make fun of him, but honestly, you have to, because it's just so it's fantastic. And we had heard so. We want to confirm or deny. We had heard that a lot of the pagers were modified on the ship after they were released for delivery. Were they all done in a factory, or were they?
I don't know that. I don't know that. I thought that they were assembled and prepared at the whatever this company was in Hungary.
Sure, that makes sense.
It's called BAC Consulting.
Yeah, and I understand the CEO of that company is now missing.
Oh, whoops.
There's some speculation about that company. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so he might have not been that guy. Well, and then a little Wikipedia search, you know, the pager was really, the first real pager was invented by a Jewish engineer in 1949.
Yeah,
I'm like, how classic
amazing,
is that?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, another argument for time travel. It's like, yep, the Mossad can time travel. That's my theory. okay, so what else about this? I mean, how come nobody squealed? Like, how does that work? That's what we were talking about on the break. Was for heaven's sakes, somebody
excellent
always
discipline, don't they? God. Whoever the they is, they have excellent discipline.
Yeah,
but what followed was step two, step three, and I think this is a multi-phased operation, but. The very next day, and I think that would have been Wednesday of this past week, walkie-talkies, another, you know, sort of simple pre-cell phone kind of a communication device, they started blowing up all over Lebanon and maybe even elsewhere like Syria, too. And so, you know, that method of communication was now gone too. And more of you know, the Hezbollah fighters were taken out.
Sure.
But then, the very next day, I guess, I think probably by Thursday, and certainly now through the weekend, there were lots of Israeli airstrikes conducted, including one in particular that took place in what's called the Dahiya. That's the southern part, suburb, almost, I guess, of Beirut. And it is the stronghold of Hezbollah. Well, it appears that a number of them, maybe as many as 15, of what they call the Radwan force, that is the top echelon of Hezbollah, you know, terror jihadis, they were meeting together in a building in the Dahiya. And a very precise airstrike took them all out. So not only thousands of the fighters, you know, incapacitated, many, many hundreds outright killed, comms gone, terror, you know, instilled, but now the top levels of Hezbollah's terror apparatus are gone, 15, including one in particular whose name was Ibrahim Aqil, A-Q-I-L, Ibrahim Aqil. And he had taken the place, I guess kind of moving up the ranks. I don't know who will follow him. But you might remember that back some weeks earlier in the summer this year, an airstrike, again, in Beirut, had taken out another top Hezbollah military leadership figure whose name was Fuad Shukr, S-H-U-K-R, Shukr. And he, in turn, had previously taken the place of one notorious terror chieftain of Hezbollah named Imad Mughniya. Now, Imad Mughniya was not only, along with Fuad Shukr and the others, not only responsible for the attacks in 1983 on the U.S. and the French embassies in Beirut, but also, of course, the U.S. Marine Corps barracks, that bombing.
My brother was stationed there like a month after that happened.
Oh, my. Well, that was the work of Imad Mughniya. Now, he was sent off to meet his virgins in early 2008. That's when Fuad Shukr moved up to the top position of terror chieftain of Hezbollah, which means that he, well, I should back up. Not only Fuad Shukr, but before that, Imad Mughniya, while he was still among us, they were the key contacts, collaborators with the Iranians for the attacks of 9/11. But I don't know why. Nobody ever talks about that.
No.
But so,
wouldn't want to tell
Mughniya,
people that.
Mughniya's gone in 2008. Fuad Shukr just earlier this summer. And now the third of the top ranks, and that is Ibrahim Aqil, along with 14 or something other top Hezbollah Radwan force leadership people. All gone.
Yeah, it really says a lot about their ability to track and identify these leaders.
In real time.
Yeah, and they don't forget. I mean, going back to 1983, they knew who this guy was.
Yeah.
And
but you know what? We didn't do that. We didn't exact, you know, that just, you know, result. That the Israelis did it.
Yeah.
And I recall that this was during the Reagan administration, of course, in 1983. Just saw the movie, by the way, Reagan. It's excellent. Go watch it. But in 1983, during the Reagan administration is when this occurred in Beirut. And I recall good friend and missed so much, retired four-star Admiral James, nicknamed Ace Lyons, who at the time of his retirement had been the commander of the Pacific Fleet of the U.S. Navy. Anyway, At the time, I think he was with the Mediterranean fleet, but Reagan instructed Ace Lyons to get together with the French, because they'd been hit too in their embassy, and figure out who did this and how to respond. So they did, and Ace comes back to Reagan and says, look, this is Hezbollah, which is just forming at that point in time, early 80s. Their headquarters are in the King Abdullah Barracks in the Bekaa Valley. We and the French, we can mount a joint strike and get rid of them. They'll be gone. And Reagan was ready to give the order to go ahead with that plan, which would have saved how much?
Oh, yeah.
But then Secretary of Defense Cap Weinberger interceded and somehow turned Reagan's mind around and told him that if we were to conduct such a strike, we and the French, against Hezbollah, that the entire Arab world would turn against us and we'd never again have a friend in the Arab world. Now, a bunch of nonsense, of course, but they persuaded Reagan. The strike never took place, and the rest is now history.
Wow. You imagine one person, you know, and a handful of their compatriots and all the destruction they've wrought over the years.
Yeah.
I have
and because of a decision, right?
Yeah.
One decision in the Oval Office in 1983.
I have a question. You spoke about pagers. You spoke about handheld radios.
Uh-huh.
What about the solar panels? We heard about solar panels blowing up. Could you explain what those were and did they get anybody?
Apparently, maybe some. I don't have numbers on that. But door intercoms as well. I mean, different kinds of devices, not just the pagers or the walkie-talkies, but other devices too. And I don't know, you know, the toll that those explosions took, but I do know that there were other devices that were also, you know, specially prepared.
I think if you look at Sun Tzu, Art of War, the Israelis have been absolutely perfect at it. They drove the battlefield, and they drove the combatants where they wanted to be. And so when they took out those 15 people, they knew there was no longer any communications, and they pushed them right into that building.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they may have thought they were safe there. They may have thought they didn't have pagers in their hands or pockets. No walkie-talkies either. That was an aerial strike.
They had real-time communication, as I understand, and they had made a phone call to the leader that you just spoke about, and they moved him from the underground part of the bunker up to his personal office, and then they hit him.
Yeah, Ibrahim Akil.
Ibrahim Akil, that's right.
Uh-huh.
Is that true? Is that confirmed?
I don't know that those specifics. I've not heard, but it sounds about right. Sure.
So the Israelis can call you up to blow you up. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we can understand that the top leadership, meaning Hassan Nasrallah, who's the Secretary General of Hezbollah, his number two is named Naeem Qassem. They probably live underground in bunkers. And Akil would have been often there as well, knowing, you know, how good the Israelis' intelligence is.
Thinking out of the box with your expertise, what do you think the Israelis have on plan, you know, planned for them next, like Mossad?
Well, I think they're systematically taking down Hezbollah right now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll recall that back after the 2006 war, the United Nations Security Council passed a resolution, number 1701, that called for any militias, any armed militias, to vacate, to move out of the southern part of Lebanon. It's like, 7 or 8 miles or something, up to the Latani River, which runs crosswise across Lebanon, but to move north of the Latani River. Well, and then UNIFIL was formed to, I guess, kind of sort of maybe enforce that. UNIFIL, United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon, is what that acronym stands for, and they promptly got in bed with Hezbollah and never did a thing. And so Hezbollah, an armed, increasingly well-armed militia, basically even further militarized the entire part of southern Lebanon south of the Litani River down to the border with Israel. And then from these places, you know, certainly since October 7, or maybe I should say October 8, last year, 2023, you know, we're launching rockets and projectiles and missiles from that area into northern Israel against kibbutzim and towns and villages there, to the point that something like 80,000 or more Israelis have had to vacate their own homes in northern Israel and move towards the center of the country to hotels or stay with family or other friends or whatever to be away from the range of these Hezbollah launches.
And just so people have some kind of frame of reference, like if you're in the United States and you're thinking, well, that means I've got to move to, you know, the Midwest. Well, that's pretty far. You know, mm-hmm. that gives me a place to go. Not that you have any contacts there. But Israel fits, the country of Israel would fit in the state of California 8 times.
How about the size of Rhode Island?
You could fit 8 Israels in the state of California.
Like Rhode Island. Yeah.
So move to the middle of the country. That's like you could ride a bike there.
In the days since, Hezbollah has launched a barrage of rockets and missiles and so forth that have reached as far south even as Tel Aviv, which is smack in the middle of the country, south of Haifa in any case, further south than Haifa. So the point being, though, that the UN, the Security Council, UNIFIL, never ever enforced Resolution 1701, never ever moved Hezbollah north of the Litani River, and that's what's going on now. Israel is taking enforcement of 1701 into its own hands and basically wiping out Hezbollah, personnel, terrorists, but also more recently in just the last day or two and more, the launch sites, the weapons depots, the ammunition stockpiles, all of that in this area of Lebanon, south of Litani River, down to the Israeli border. That's what's going on right now.
And Lebanon has a fairly large standing army, don't they?
Well, yes, which the United States and others have lavished funding on, which, of course, goes straight to Hezbollah, because Hezbollah owns and operates the Lebanese armed forces. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Brutal.
Do you think that Israel can sustain a two-front war? And where are they getting their munitions now that they're? I know the U.S. is still sending them munitions, but as I understand it, Kamala says we're not sending any more 2,000-pound bombs and weapons of basically mass destruction. Are they going to other arms suppliers, maybe in South America or Korea?
The fighting in Gaza has really tapered off. Hamas has been deconstructed, certainly in the north, in the center, Khan Yunis area, and pretty much even down now in Rafah. And so there is a shift in the IDF focus from fighting there in Gaza to the north, troops, battalions are being moved. So it's not even so much a two-front war in that sense anymore now that Gaza is tapering off. But let's remember, they're still, you know, facing an onslaught over the Golan Heights from Syria, from the Shiite militias operating in Iraq, from the Houthis coming on up from Yemen, and, you know, Iran itself, certainly back in April of this year that happened. So they're still fighting a multi-front war, but in the immediate area, the Gaza operations are tapering off, while the northern, against Hezbollah operations are gearing up.
Well, it's kind of a good thing they planned for that a long time ago.
They really did. And as far as the ammunition and so forth, I was listening to a very good presentation today from former Ambassador Yoram Ettinger, and he was explaining that there are a couple of different levels of interaction between the United States and Israel. And at a political level, let's say President Biden, Vice President Harris, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, you know, that level, you get a lot of this pressure that's been publicly, you know, levied against the Israeli leadership, certainly Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Minister of Defense, you have Gallant, and so forth. You know, ceasefire and they were holding up shipments of certain supplies, weapons, ammunition. But at another level, and Ambassador Ettinger was making this point in the presentation today, a webinar, that at the level of military to military, mill to mill, and intelligence collaboration between the United States, our forces, and the Israelis, it's a very different picture. The supply continues. We continue to send what they need to fight. Israel, in turn, turns around and provides us with way more, probably than they ever get from us. We can talk about that at some point. So that exchange, again, operates on a couple of different levels, and at the mill-to-mill intelligence, cooperation, it's very strong, very steady.
That's good.
So they are getting what they need, but another thing
Hold that thought, Claire. We're going to take a really quick break, or we're going to have it all at the end, which will be kind of weird. Plus, you know, I did find a couple other songs for Hezbollah, so, you know, got to make sure we fit those in and thank the sponsors for the station and stuff. You can find us at We the People Radio. Bill's asleep at the switch. It's a .us, by the way.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Sure, after you've been a terrorist your whole life, that song is written for somebody else, but it was fun anyway.
Yeah. So, Johnny Cash always was one of my favorites.
God Bless America. I saw that and I was like, that's harsh, totally playing that. All of this has been just so many years in the making. Just to get everybody to this point, they've been fighting there forever. Honestly, just based on what you know and what you've done in your career and stuff, do you think that will ever, ever stop over there?
Not as long as Islam rules the thinking of these people. We probably know, our listeners probably know, that in the very early years, according to the Quran and the Hadiths and the Sirah, Muhammad, if he ever lived, but we're not sure about that, but if he did, that he tried to get the three large, prosperous Jewish tribes of the peninsula to convert to Islam, to come over to him, the Banu Quraysh, the Banu Nadir, and the Banu Kanuka. And they didn't want to. They wanted to be Jews, and they wanted to remain Jewish. So he wiped them all out.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that time, there has been, of course, an imitation, emulation of everything that Muhammad supposedly ever did. And there are references in the Quran to Muhammad as the Ansan al-Kamil, which means the perfect man, which means that anything he ever did must be emulated and copied down the generations forever and ever and repeated. And then there's another doctrine within Islam. It's called the doctrine of sacred space, which means that any place ever conquered and or occupied by the forces of Islam, which would include the entire Levant and certainly on up into the Iberian Peninsula, formerly called Andalusia, the Indian subcontinent, and so forth, ever occupied or conquered by the forces of Islam is forever what they call waqf, W-A-Q-F, waqf, meaning land endowed by Allah, that is God, to Muslims in perpetuity. So it is obligatory on every Muslim on the face of the earth to fight Jews, to kill Jews, and to recover land once of formerly conquered Jerusalem, for example, conquered by Islam in like 638, I think it was, have to be reconquered. And they have to fight to the end of time to do it, or they go to hell. This is what they believe. So no, it's not going to stop. I'll tell you though.
Anybody who thinks we're going to just have a meeting, you know, somebody's going to get elected, they're going to have a meeting, and I don't.
Well, the whole two-state solution is a pipe dream.
Ridiculous. And we can talk a whole other hour about that. But I was going to say the one thing that can cause the forces of Islam to hold off, at least temporarily, is if they see themselves so outnumbered, outmatched, that they cannot continue to wage jihad successfully, then and only then it's obligatory for them to hold off in a hudna, a temporary backing off, until their forces are rebuilt, regained, and then they have to go back at it again. So the job right now for Israel, for others in the region, defenders of their own national sovereignty, the thing to do is to so overwhelm the forces of Islam, and that, of course, includes the Islamic Republic of Iran's leadership, as well as their proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Hashdu Shabi in Iraq, the Houthis, convince them that they are so overwhelmed, so outmatched, they cannot possibly achieve victory, and they got to back down. That's what has to be done right now.
I haven't heard Saudi Arabia and Egypt jumping in on this. They're keeping their borders closed, as far as I know. Is that correct? And do they have what's their motive for staying out of the fight more than the obvious?
The Mossad.
Well, I mean, you know, Egypt is pretty, shall we say, upset about the IDF's taking over of the Philadelphia corridor. That is the 7 mile strip that separates the Gaza Strip from the Sinai Peninsula and Egypt, because they were making an awful lot of money. The president of Egypt, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, and his family were, you know, they were well compensated for, you know, the taxes, shall we say, on what passed through those tunnels underneath the Philadelphia corridor. But at the same time, now that the IDF controls all of that, the Egyptians don't want any part of Gazans coming back over to their side unless they pay, I don't know, I've seen $5,000, I've seen the equivalent of $10,000 a head, and then they'll consider it. So they don't want any part of these people. They know they're trouble. They're Muslim Brotherhood. 80% of the people in Gaza literally are of Egyptian heritage. That's where they came from, or their, you know, the parents, grandparents. But the same thing for Saudi Arabia, but was a little bit different. Saudi Arabia was supporting the Abraham Accords and will again, you know, once we get proper leadership back in our own White House. They were behind the acceptance by the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Morocco, Sudan, the four. Their acceptance and joining into the Abraham Accords. And it was expected at the time back then that Saudi Arabia itself, with MBS, the son of the king, Mohammed bin Salman, that with his backing, that Saudi Arabia would also at some point openly join. But certainly they were behind it. They remain behind it. What's going on behind the scenes remains an exchange between Saudi Arabia leadership and Israel. That's not changed at all. Only the open, appearances may have paused the cooperation for the moment. But that'll get going again once, we have proper leadership back in Washington, D.C.
The control of Hamas prior to the conflict, controlling the population, wasn't the unemployment rate very, very high? And so many young people did not have jobs, which would foment unrest. And they did that purposefully to keep them upset?
Well, it wasn't only that. It was also the fact that of all the gazillions of dollars that international aid coming in from European countries, from the United States, from UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, bagazillions of dollars coming in humanitarian aid, which could have built Gaza into a two-state solution with its beautiful shoreline on the Mediterranean, enormous freshwater aquifer that underlies the Gaza Strip, climate conducive to growing anything you want in produce. But all of that aid, or a good part of it, went to line the pockets of the Hamas leadership, like the dearly departed Ismail Haniyeh in Doha, Qatar, Khaled Mashal, who's still over there, Abu Arzouk, Marzouk over there in UAE, line their pockets, and in Gaza to buy weaponry and build tunnels. Hundreds and hundreds of miles of tunnels underneath that little Gaza Strip. That's where all the money went.
Is there any hope?
Yes, the people were left in poverty. Yes.
Is there any hope for the 100 hostages left?
Yes, of course there is. The IDF is very much focused on rescuing whomever they can that's still alive there, and they are constantly trying to do that every part of their mission, every part of their operation still going on, that is still going on, in particular down in Rafah.
But do you think they'll be left alive?
Yes.
I think they want to rescue them, but do you think that...
Yes. Some will, perhaps. Some will not.
I mean, they killed the last batch right as the IDF was on top of them. That's what I see happening.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
No, I heard that. Yeah.
Wow. What else do people need to know as they kind of watch this? I'm not even going to ask you what you think of all the people that are sympathizers for all this, because that's just...
They have no clue what's going on. They're completely ignorant of the actual facts. I think this is the final showdown, or at least a major showdown, maybe I shouldn't say final, but a major showdown right now between Israel and Hezbollah. And it's important in this respect, not just so that the Israeli citizens who live in the north of Israel can go back to their homes and rebuild the ones that have been bombed, but also because Hezbollah was the insurance policy for the Iranian regime's nuclear weapons program. That is, I think that the Iranians are very close to finishing deployment of deliverable nuclear weapons. I think they've got at least a small handful of warheads that have not perhaps yet been attached to the nose cones of their missiles. But when that happens, that would be the final step, and Israel would have to take action. But pending that, Israel perhaps was somewhat deterred because of Hezbollah's 150,000 or whatever it is missiles in their arsenal on their northern border, Israel's northern border, and many of those missiles equipped with precision guidance packages, kits, upgrade kits that had been sent over from Iran to Hezbollah. But now with the takedown of Hezbollah, it's certainly greatly degraded. Not destroyed completely, no, but greatly degraded, and their capabilities, their missile launch sites, their ammo dumps, their missile, the missiles themselves. That greatly degrades Hezbollah's capability as a deterrent force for Israel when the time comes that they're going to have to go after Iran's nukes.
Nice. Well, I've already sent you an email about coming back on about the two-state solution because we have to talk about that.
We should.
And and the bio, so you can go about your life and just check
that.
Your email
I'll
later.
Do that for you.
But yes, we are flat out of time for this hour, which I knew would happen way too fast.
Of course,
so
it always
thank you
does.
So much. Our guest has been Claire Lopez, and we have a special song for the Mossad. It's a little shout-out.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you both.
We'll be right back in another hour with WeThePeopleRadio.us.